This is part two on work, which we began to look at last week. Work, doing work God's way. So, the book of Genesis, we looked at last week, we laid a foundation, and we saw in the book of Genesis, work is a good thing. It is a good thing, mentally, physically, psychologically, to work. It is a great thing. It is part of the good world that God has made. God has created people, men and women, to work and to rest. We work and then we rest. The temptation we saw last week is to blur those two. And so we're sort of, it's not clear when we're working, it's not clear when we're resting. And we end up working when we should be resting. And if you ignore God on that issue, you will end up in trouble, eventually. Mentally, physically, you'll end up in a lot of trouble. Our brother Will Forbin, he said to me recently, he said, a day off is a weekly test of faith. That's what he said. He said, a day off is a weekly test of faith. God tests us every week. Will we devote 24 hours when we will not do anything as a testimony that he can help me to do everything I need to do in the other 6 days? Or do I not trust him and say, okay, I'm going to work on the seventh day, whenever that is? It is a test of faith. Will you trust God to help you to do in 6 days what will in other ways take seven? We need to take time off. So that's the early part of the Old Testament. We're going to move on in the Old Testament to the wisdom literature, and especially the book of Proverbs and Ecclesiastes, which we looked at last year, didn't we? Those two books. And the headlines from these two books about work is, number one, work hard. Number two, work is hard. Okay, those are the two things we're going to learn today. Number one, the need to work hard. Number two, the need to understand that work will be hard. So the first one, Proverbs 6, which we looked at. Let's have a look at those verses again. Verse 6, go to the ant, you sluggard. Okay, the sluggard, yep. Consider its ways and be wise. It has no commander, no overseer or ruler, yet it stores its provisions in summer and gathers its food at harvest. What is an ant? An ant is small. An ant is insignificant insect. What is a sluggard? A sluggard is a sloppy, sluggish, lethargic, lazy person. The Proverbs say the sluggard, the lazy person, needs to look at the insignificant thing in the creation. The sluggard needs to look at God's creation, look at its work. For in looking at its work, you will find an example that you need to take on board in your own life. So ants, what do we know about them? They work together. They work together. They're not just doing their own thing. But they work hard. They work as a team and they work hard. And as a result, they get everything they need. So in season, they store away what they will need in the future. That is what we can all learn from ants. Isn't that brilliant? That's what the sluggard needs to learn. So verse 9, what are we told? How long will you lie there, you sluggard? When will you get up from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come on you like a bandit, and scarcity like an armed man. Genesis. Too much work, not enough rest. Proverbs, too much rest, not enough work. That's what we're seeing here. Yeah? And it's a condemnation of laziness that we see throughout the Proverbs consistently. A condemnation of laziness and lazy people and lazy attitudes. Now, we need to be careful. Not all poverty is the result of laziness. There are people who can work hard and work very hard, but because of various factors, they may not have a lot of money at the end. But they'll work just as hard as someone in an office or someone in a bank. But what we're told here is some poverty can be traced to the desire for work. That where a person doesn't really want to do much work, it can lead to poverty. Not all the time, but it can lead to poverty. So from my experience on the South Kilburn estate, when I used to work there, what did I see? I saw people who wanted to work, but they couldn't, either because of family or they were a carer or because of health. They weren't able to do it. But I also saw people working hard for not much money. But here's something I also saw. A minority, mainly men, who were gifted, who could work, but didn't want to. They were experts at doing no work. They knew the system better than the people who devised the system. And so they could make a living sort of doing next to nothing. And the Bible would say, you're potentially in trouble. Yeah? You and your families are going to be in trouble if you will not work. And that's not just a observation on the working classes. I used to work with a guy who was the only child. His parents were only children. And he was effectively just sponging off his grandparents. If ever he wanted something, he would go and see them. So he'd come to work with a leather jacket, and you'd say, oh, you mean to see your grandparents again? And he was basically almost waiting for them to pass away and inherit everything. And he was doing, a very gifted guy, but he was doing the bare minimum. And he was quite proud of it. He thought it was brilliant. It's that sort of attitude that's condemned. Yeah? We need to work. So turn with me to Proverbs 10. Proverbs 10 verse 4. And it says this. 10 verse 4. Lazy hands make a man poor, but diligent hands brings wealth. He who gathers crops in summer is a wise son, but he who sleeps during harvest is a disgraceful son. Yeah, you brought disgrace on the family if you're sleeping in August, September in the UK, having a kip, and your parents are working the farm. You've got the contrast here between the diligent and the lazy. Effectively, you've got two ways to live, two ways to operate. Will laziness always lead to poverty? Answer, not always. Yeah, because in the UK, as I've said, there's a number of people, you can hide behind your parents for quite a long time and sort of play on their heartstrings, and they'll give you a room or somewhere, and you can basically avoid it if you want to do it. But in most cases around the world, if you're doing next to nothing, deliberately, you know, you could work, but you don't want to, you will end up with less. Around the world, that's what's going to happen. And that's the warning that's given here. But the good news is, where there is diligent work, where there is hard work, it will generally be rewarded. That's what we're told, isn't it, in these verses. Good work, hard work, will be rewarded. God will reward you. And so the way out of poverty for many is hard work that often begins as you study. So I'm sure many of you had parents who were on your case when you were younger. You need to work hard. Have you done your homework? Why are they doing that? Because They want you to have that mindset, that culture of hard work that is going to lead you out of poverty. That's what they're trying to do. So who needs to hear this? Who needs to hear all this stuff about laziness? Well, we all do. Probably children. Children really need to hear about it, don't they? Grandchildren need to hear about it. We need to get it across to youngsters. You need to work hard. A lot of the things that you see people have is as the result of hard work over a long period of time. Yeah, you see Lewis Hamilton, he jumps into a car, he's wearing all this nice bling. What do you think he was doing all his life? Did he just sort of wake up in the morning and say, I'll just phone Ferrari and I'll try and deal with Ferrari or whatever? No, he's working hard. There's actually a film of him as an eight-year-old in a go-kart with his dad as the manager and him having a go at his dad for damaging the go-kart. It's quite funny. The dad's almost apologising. But he's been doing it over a number of years. Yeah, a doctor. You see a doctor, it's a sort of semi-glamorous job, isn't it? Before, NHS stuff, but it's usually quite a glamorous job. But that's years, isn't it, of study. Years of study and sacrifice to get to that point. Youngsters need to know that, don't they? We need to get it across. People work hard. Ronaldo works hard, doesn't he? Yeah, for all the sort of showboating, that footballer, preening and all the rest of it, he works hard at what he does. I can remember reading the story about this rock band. They're quite a big band, I won't say they are, but their first album. And I was reading as a teenager and it said, it only took them 350 hours to do their first album. I read it, I was shocked. 350 hours! I thought it only took like a couple of days to make an album. Hard work. Hard work. 350 hours. You need to work hard. Doctor, architect, tradesman, whatever the job, we need to get it across to them. Yeah? As children or grandchildren, we need to get it across. The practice of some people is to coast through work. We know those sort of people. They sort of roll in late. They take 10 minutes extra for lunch, which adds up to about 50 minutes over the course of a week. They're taking endless toilet breaks. They're talking about football when they're making a cup of tea or what's on television. They're making paperclip necklaces. Some of them are making paper planes when the boss isn't looking. They are doing the bare minimum. They're doing the bare minimum. Not so with you. Yeah. If you're a Christian, not so with you. Your father is a hard worker. You must be a hard worker. Your father in heaven works, and we should work. We should work hard. How important is hard work? Proverbs 31 says, you're looking for a marriage partner. Yes, that person needs to be godly, but if they're not working hard, keep moving. Keep moving. You want to advise your children or grandchildren, what should I look for? Oh, yeah, I'd love to get married in the future. Someone who loves the Lord, as long as that person loves the Lord. Number two, you need to work hard. Watch out for the skiver. There are many in Britain from my working knowledge. So that's number one. We've got to work hard. And when we do, it does open doors. It does gain a level of respect for the gospel. There are people who will not talk to you if you were to stand outside their office building handing out leaflets or gospels, who will talk to you if you're next to them and you're working hard. People will generally appreciate those who work hard. The skiver is a nightmare. Okay. So, temptation number one, laziness. And the answer is to work hard. Temptation number two is to see work as everything. Work is my everything. It is my life. It is my identity. It is my purpose. When people ask me, what do I do? And I tell them, I feel proud. Yeah, I will spend hours and hours and hours doing this particular job. And that is when work can become a god. It can literally become a god. You can put work before God himself. It can become an idol. You can end up worshipping it. It becomes more important than God himself. And that is effectively, I think, what you're encouraged to, how you're encouraged to think, even as children. The whole thing about education is not even education for the sake of it. It's education so you can get a good job. They're almost preparing the ground for you to do that. And if that's how you see work, you are inevitably going to be very, very disappointed. So have a look at the book of Ecclesiastes. It's a couple of books on from, where's the next book after Proverbs? And Ecclesiastes chapter 1. Ecclesiastes 1 and verse 1. Ecclesiastes 1 verse 1, the words of a teacher, son of David, king of Jerusalem. Meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Utterly meaningless. Everything, everything is meaningless. Where some versions have meaningless, some other versions will have vanity. Yeah, vanity as in vain, pointless, waste of time sort of thing. So when does life become pointless? When we take God out of the picture. When you take God out of the picture, you ignore God, what happens? Life will become pointless. You will lose your purpose. Life will lose its purpose. The word that they use, or the phrase in Ecclesiastes is, under the sun. Yeah? Under the sun, verse 3, we're going to look at in a minute. And that vanity affects everything. Pleasures can become meaningless. Wisdom becomes meaningless. Riches become meaningless. Relationships can become meaningless. And work can become meaningless. Verse 3. What does man gain from all his labor, at which he labors under the sun? What does he gain? Verse 3, labor, toil. Yeah, reminder of Genesis 3. Yeah, I'm going to have to toil to get the crops that I need. I'm going to have to fight off insects, other predators, trying to prey upon my crops. I'm going to have weeds that I'm going to have to pull up. I'm going to have the ground. It's going to be sometimes be hard. It's going to be hard work. So come to chapter 2, verse 17. This is life under the sun for the thinking person. If you're a person who just basically moves on sort of autopilot through life, it's not going to bother you. But if you're a person who thinks about life, this will become you if you leave God out of the picture. Verse 17. So I hated life because the work that is done under the sun was grievous to me. All of it was meaningless, the chasing after the wind. Okay? What would you do if you saw one of these children running around in a circle in the sports centre car park? And you say, what do you think you're doing? I'm just trying to catch some wind. I'm just chasing it around. What would you say to them? Let's go home. Yeah, let's go home. It's quite pointless what you're trying to do. You can't chase it. You can't catch it. And that's what it's like when life becomes meaningless. Yeah? So where work equals life and life equals work, the result will be a loathing. We will hate work, we will hate our life, because it's mundane, because it's boring, because it's stressful. But there's a particular reason why Solomon hates it here. Verse 18, I hated all these things I had toiled for under the sun, because I must leave them to the one who comes after me. And who knows whether he will be a wise man or a fool. Yet he will have control over all the work into which I have poured my effort and skill under the sun. This too is meaningless. Solomon's disgust comes from what happens to the fruit of his work, the wealth that he's got. Okay, he dies, and what's going to happen to his wealth? Yeah? It's not going to be like some sort of Tutankhamun where we can put your possessions in your box with you and you'll carry it on to the next world. Now, what's going to happen to his wealth? Someone else is going to get it. But what's going to happen to your wealth? Whatever wealth you've got, you're not going to have it. Much of it's going to end up with someone else. Yeah? And if it's a good person, if they're acting wisely, good, isn't it? But you've got no guarantees of that, have you? There's loads of examples of people who've taken their parents' and grandparents' fortune and blown it on all kinds of nonsense. And it's all gone. You worked hard, and after all that stress, your ignorant relative blew it away. That's why he's upset. That's why he's upset. So verse 20. So my heart began to despair, okay, despair, over all my toilsome labor under the sun. For a man may do his work with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, and then he must leave all he owns to someone who has not worked for it. This too is meaningless and a great misfortune. What does a man get from all the toil and anxious striving with which he labors under the sun? All his days, his work is pain and grief. Even at night, his mind does not rest. Okay, you can't get a good night's sleep. This too is meaningless. God is out of the picture and things are bad. So the two things that really upset him, I think, is number one is who's going to get my money? And what are they going to do with it? Yeah, I work hard, hours and hours. Someone takes it and just blows it on nonsense. Number two is the actual toil itself. Work is hard. Work can be hard. At times it's a joy, but at times it can become a total burden. Yeah? So you can be overworked. You can be underpaid. You can have poor conditions. You can have lazy colleagues. You can have lying colleagues. You can have demotion. You can be passed up for promotion. You can be suspended. You can be made redundant. You can experience bad management. Okay? I've seen it all. Old enough to have seen it all. And many of you have seen it all. And the result is work becomes terrible. Yeah? And here's the thing. It will get worse if work is your life. If work is your life, it will get far, far worse. Because something will go wrong at work. And if work is your God, work becomes your idol, then when that goes down, you go down. And at some point, you're going to have to give up the work. You know, you do get these people who sort of roll on, as a football manager in his 70s. Good for him. Hey? But at some point, he's going to have to give it up. And then what happens? Again, if it is your life, when you have to give it up, you won't be able to cope. You see some people enjoying their retirement, and some people just pining for the prestige they had when they used to work, and our people don't respect them now. We must not make work our God. Is there a way out of this futility, this vainness? There is. But it is a hard road, and few find it. It's hard because it means honesty before God. You may have to admit before God, actually, I have made too much of my work. I have found my identity, not in Jesus, but in the work that I do. I will need to ask God to forgive me. I will need to confess to Him. And rather than do that, many people just plow on. You just plow on. But where we do ask God for forgiveness, do you want to hear some good news? Are you ready for some good news? he'll forgive you. He's ready to forgive us and to get us thinking rightly about work again. Even to the point we begin to find purpose in our work and even in the most mundane work that people can dismiss. Through getting right with God, we can see work in the way we should, not distorted, not become my everything, not my purpose, not my life. The major people who struggle with this, one of the groups I see struggle with this, Christian workers. Christian workers are people who struggle with, this is my life, this is who I am, and keeping them separate. We struggled a lot. We need to be careful. Our work is not our life. Our life is our life. Our work is not our life. Let's look at a couple of passages as we finish. Have a look at chapter 12. Ecclesiastes chapter 12. This is deliverance from futility and vanity and waste of time. Chapter 12, verse 1. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth. Before the days of trouble come and the years approach, when you will say, I find no pleasure in them. So we need to remember our Creator. Remember that we were created. Remember our relationship with our Creator. That will keep us from vanity, and that will keep us from the negativity, the despair, the darkness that Solomon gives us. And then verse 13 says this of chapter 12. Now all has been heard. Here is the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments. Fear God, okay, respect him, honor him. Keep what he says, his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it is good or whether it is evil. So here's the way out of futility. We need to remember our Creator. Okay? So here's a little test for you as you finish. In terms of work, what are you? If you're a Christian, what are you? Are you a Christian nurse, or say a Christian farmer, or are you a farming Christian, a nursing Christian? Which one are you? Are you the student Christian or the Christian student? The last word is the key of how you see things. Yeah? Christian student, I'm a Christian, but studying is my main thing. Studying Christian was my main thing. Studying is what I do. You need to keep the two apart. Okay? Which are you? Are you a Christian carpenter or a carpentering Christian? Which one? That's work 2.0. Next time, God willing, New Testament. New Testament. We've laid a foundation. But remember, work hard. Work is hard. And it will be harder if it's an idol. It becomes your God, your identity, your purpose. Your identity is in Jesus Christ. Amen.